When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
It's not even about the success, it's about a 35-year journey to be in the position to do exactly what it is that you love.
My name is Detavio Samuels, and welcome to The Black Grid, where I sit with the innovators, disruptors, and change makers laying the groundwork for the next generation of cultural leaders. Hey! This is The Black Grid. My man, D, nice.
Yes.
Thank you for coming, brother.
I'm excited to be here.
It's been a busy weekend, too.
Good.
It's been a crazy weekend, so I know you are super busy, so thank you for making the time, brother.
It's great, though. You know, just flew in from, I was out in Cannes.
How was Cannes? I know I should have gone this year.
It was beautiful, man.
It was beautiful, yeah. Everybody was
blackety blackest party. But the joint was so hot. Like, honestly, I've been here before, but this was, like, one of the best parties to, like, watch, like, all of our favorite people, like Issa and like Bose and like everyone just dancing and like feeling good. And
so I need you to do me a favor. Next year, I need you to hold me accountable to make sure that I show up
with
you.
I got to make sure
just on some brother stuff. Well, look, man, I'm excited to talk to you. I think, it's a couple of things. One, you and I have had a relationship for quite some time, but never got to do a conversation like this. So I'm excited to learn even more about your story. And then on the other side, I just think that you know, a lot of people talk that there's this quote that it takes 20 years to become an overnight success.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of people who think you are overnight success, and people don't know that, bro. You are like, when you want to talk hip hop, you got to go all the way back to 1985, right? So
yes,
I want to
do
all of those things in this conversation. I want to show people that you are a multi-hyphenate rapper, photographer, DJ, producer. You've done it all, right?
So I've actually done it all, man. But one, I want to go back and say I'm actually equally as excited to have this conversation with
you.
You know, it's long overdue. I have nothing but love and respect for you, and I love watching the way you move in your entire career.
Thank you, brother.
You know, and then as far as like the whole hip hop conversation is, like, yeah, this is a 35-year journey.
Exactly.
To be, it's not even about the success. It's about a 35-year journey to be in the position to do exactly what it is that you love.
Mm.
Like, I've never felt more free in my life.
Mm.
You know, like, I've always felt like the things that I would do in my career was always based on trying to make someone else happy.
Mm.
So even as a DJ, like, I played music because, hey, the promoter was hiring me, and it's the kind of vibe you wanted. Or when I was in the group with KRS, you know, I made a certain type of beats because that's what he wanted to rap over.
Mm.
This was like, now in my age, man, and as long as I've been in the business, I've never felt more free and more comfortable to just be me. And
I love
it's just
that.
Beautiful to be in this position.
I love that. Do you think that's an age thing or an era thing? I feel like era, E-R-A. I feel like more and more as I'm having conversations with friends, more and more of us are feeling that way. Like, I not only get to be myself, I get paid to be myself.
True.
And people actually value me showing up as myself in the ways that they have never done before. Do you think that's like a part of this moment that we're in? Or do you think that's just, you know, 40-something years of building?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, we went through a very difficult time, all of us, during, you know, when we all lost everything.
Yeah.
You know, we all had to stay at home.
Yeah.
Unless you lived in Atlanta or Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, you stayed at home.
Yeah.
And like, we had no way of like really communicating with each other unless it was just virtual or, you know, that was it. So I think like part of, even with what I was experiencing during that time of like, of COVID, it was the first time that I had ever released everything. Like, it didn't matter to me because when I was at home and you know, you work years to build things, to collect things, whether it's like records or whatever it is that you love. Mm. Or I like art, but I never even bought art in my own home.
Okay.
You know, when I was sitting at home the very first day when the lockdown happened, and I was sitting in a place that I lived in by myself, and I was like, man, I spent all of these years traveling the world, DJing, and I didn't like my home.
Mm.
I didn't like myself. I didn't like the life that I had.
Mm.
And then I had to just let go. And I realized that the life that I wanted was based on the things that other people wanted me to do. You know, it was based on whether it was DJing or traveling, you know, photography. It was all about other people. And this was the first time when I sat at home where I it was before I even went live. I was just like, this can't be life. You know what I mean? Like, you know, sitting at home and, you know, I'm single and like, you know, I was married before, but like, I'm single and I've been single for 7 years because I'm constantly traveling and the world stopped and you're all alone.
Yeah.
It's the worst feeling ever.
Yeah. And somehow you managed to power up and turn on the ones and twos and entertain the entire world. I want to know what the thought process was before that moment, right? You're the first one that says, I'm going to use IG Live as a platform, and then the world shows up for you. Everybody from Sean Combs to the Obamas to literally everybody shows up. What was the thought process that told you, I'm going to turn on my camera and just play?
The thought process was all based on me. It started the night before. It didn't even start that morning. It started the night before with a gentleman who used to play in the NBA, Jimmy Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy and I, we smoked cigars together. And we were just sitting in the cigar spot, like, really trying to figure out, like, yo, what are we going to do for 3 weeks? Neither one of us ever had 3 weeks off.
Okay.
It's like, what do you do for 3 weeks? And, you know, he was talking about working on his commentating. And I was like, you know what? I got this feature on Instagram called Live, you know, I'm just going to go live and tell some stories. Like, I didn't want to DJ. It wasn't about, you know, it wasn't about playing music for people. It was really about, I want to go on and I want to tell some stories to my friends about songs that I produced. So initially it wasn't called Club Quarantine. It was called Homeschool.
That's right.
Because we were all stuck at home.
Right.
I was like, all right, let me educate people on some of the records that they didn't even know that I produced because I had no credit on it. And I would play it. Then I would play the original sample. No turntable, strictly with my laptop. And I just watched people come in and, like, they were just having a great time with me sharing these stories. And, you know, I felt fulfilled. Like, I didn't feel lonely. You know, like, I felt like I saw my friends. I saw Chuck Bone.
Mm.
You know, Puff was in there. Like, we were just all having fun. We were all at home doing nothing.
Right.
And I just felt like I was addicted to it because I felt like I saw what was happening. Like, I saw it happening. I was like, wait, this is a way to stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this actually feels, it's weird, but it feels real. Like,
right,
it feels
right.
Like
real
we're
community.
Really there together. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm still playing the same music that I would play if I was in, like, a hip-hop club. Not, like, party style, but, you know, if we were doing, like, some old-school vibe, you know, these are records that I would play. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. And then I did it again. And by the third day, I played music for like 9 hours from just my laptop, and like it felt like a party, and it was like it was learn as you go, which is so crazy because John Legend and I started at the same time doing this. Like, he would get on his piano and play, and I would just tell stories.
Okay.
And then one day day two I called him, I was like, John. Yo, can we go live together so you could talk to the fans? But we didn't know, like, going live would actually tell, it would notify other people that you were going live with someone. Because this was all new to all of us.
All brand new, yeah.
And then I saw, like, the numbers jump from, like, 280 to, like, 6,000. And I was like, this is what's happening. Because I'm a tech guy. So I knew exactly what was going on. I was like, wow, this is interesting. And I became addicted to that part. And by like day three or four, man, I started calling my friends up, you know, and luckily for me that I've DJed for everyone, as you know, man, like, you know, this is definitely not an overnight thing.
Yeah.
My relationships are really deep. I've DJed for the Obamas, which is how Michelle was on there, was because I called and, you know, I felt like something magical was happening. Not for my career, but for people, because I kept reading the comments that people are leaving about how this was saving their lives, you know. And they feel so inspired and feel like they're in a dark place, but like being in this conversation is great. They feel connected. And I called and I was like, I spoke to their assistant. I was like, hey, I got, like, you know, this is a weird thing, but like I have a party on the phone. You know, I didn't even want the forever first lady to jump in. I was really trying to get like Sasha or Malia, like someone younger, because it was this.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
this is ludicrous.
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Instagram, like, sure, you know, sure. Then the queen came in.
Yeah.
And that was a moment that kind of, like, changed it for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, like people felt inspired. They felt like they were in the same room. You know, we've never felt that close to a first lady where you can say something and she would respond. Cause she was in there. I mean, we've done multiple IG lives together since then, but like she was in there, you know, communicating with people.
Yeah.
You know, and because of my relationships, other people notified, you know, the Bidens and this one, and they all came in. And, you know, to me, the story of this virtual club quarantine isn't about the music. It's about being kind to people. Mm. None of this happens if I wasn't kind to people with no agenda.
Mm-hmm. What it did was you have, and we've had a lot of these conversations on the show, but it's like we've talked a lot about the power of relationships. And you have always been, you know, your favorite DJ's favorite DJ, your favorite celebrity's favorite DJ. But I don't think everyone knew that truth. And so when you're the one, when you pull us all into a room together, it's like, oh, this is the man who has built community without even knowing that, you know, you were building a uniting community. One question that I have for you is, you said that in doing it, it was saving people's lives. I want to match it up against where you were the night before, where it sounds like you weren't in a good place, right? COVID hit you. Did it help save your life as well? Like, it sounds like you were kind of like in a darkest place, and then you're now all of a sudden you're in a party, and that party is not just helping other people. My question is, was it helping you?
The thing about, no, it definitely saved my life, you know, like, and I'm always transparent with it, and I think that's part of why the community follows me the way that they do, because I'm very transparent. Like, look, I've done well in my life, man. I've always had, like, nice car, too, you know, lived in a nice place. Like, I've always been that way, man, you know, like, I worked hard, you know, and, but in that one moment of, like, trying to figure out life and seeing all of those things didn't matter, you know, like, I couldn't get to my kids, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't protect my kids. Mm. The one thing that you, you know, just as a man or as a parent, you know, you want to do, you want to be able to provide, you know, none of what I had saved up mattered. Mm. I couldn't buy food. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, they broke into every grocery store. So I had, like, no food at home. I literally had nothing, bro. Like, well, let me not say literally. I bought, like, protein bars and lima beans. I never made lima beans in my life, man. Like, that's literally, that was all that was available. You know what I mean?
Like I'm gonna figure it out.
It was like the Wild Wild West, bro. Like, Armageddon for real. Like, so it was very humbling, you know? And, you know, when I say that the community saved my life, it's not even just based on, like, somebody coming to a show or something like that. It is literally about, well, there are multiple things. And not a lot of black DJs doing what I do because we've never seen it.
Describe doing what you do.
In terms of, you know, I can do a Hollywood Bowl or I can do, you know,
Ibiza.
Well, when does this air? I know you're going to edit this part.
July, right? Like July, August.
Oh, so then I can say this now. Okay. Yeah, I have, you know, there are not a lot of black DJs doing what I do in terms of, like, performing in certain venues, you know. So, you know, I sold out a Hollywood Bowl, you know. I just announced that, you know, I have Club Quarantine live at Carnegie Hall.
Amazing.
You know, like, there are not a lot of us that are able to say things like that,
absolutely,
you know. And as a DJ, I aspired to be someone that I wasn't really. Like, I looked at all of the bigger DJs that I know, whether it's the Steve Aokis or Calvin Harris or, you know, like a lot of the EDM guys, and they're doing these big arenas and big shows playing EDM, but you never see like a black dude playing Stevie Wonder doing that. You know what I mean? Like, so when I say the people saved my life, it's like, you gave me the freedom to be who I am. Like, I love a Stevie record the same way that I love a David Guetta song. And I feel like you should be able to play these records together. And like, I never had that freedom. You know, I always felt limited because it was about who was hiring me. And like, now, when I say save my life, bro, like, you gave, like, the fans gave me the freedom to just be who I am.
Is part of that freedom rooted in your ability to say no? Like, jobs can come in, and now you can say, yes, I want this job, or no, I don't want to do that job at all.
That is
Or maybe the better way to ask it is, where's the freedom originate from? Like, what is the core of the
starts
freedom?
The core of the freedom starts from being able to play music the way that I hear it. You know, like, I can't pretend that I'm a DJ that's 23 years old. You know, I grew up in, you know, I was born in 1970, you know, like, which is crazy to still be here and to be more relevant than I've ever been in my career. But I was born in 70, man, so I'm 52 years old with, like, eight-year-old fans. But I can play what I want. And that is, that level of freedom doesn't normally happen unless you are, you know, unless you are one of those bigger DJs and you're pretty much playing your own songs. Like, you don't really see, you don't typically see, like, open format DJs like myself with that type of freedom, you know? So I feel like the audience, the people that supported me and that have been supporting me throughout my entire career, not even just the last 2 years, have always given me that freedom to be who I am. I just didn't recognize it. You know, I didn't recognize it because I was too busy chasing what I thought, you know, I thought other DJs we're doing, and, you know, to be able to play Vegas or to be able to play, you know, any of these places, you know, and like, you know, in the last 2 years, like, I've had like an amazing career to be able to be able to play what you love as opposed to just playing what you think people want to hear. Like, I can truly be me, man. And that's what I've learned in the last 2 years, that being me is enough.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Being you is more than enough, brother. It's more than enough. Is there anything specific you want to talk about in terms of what's happening in your career right now in this moment?
No. I'll answer whatever, man. Okay. You know, like,
so then let's go here.
I can talk a lot, bro.
Yeah. Keep going. Okay, so we're going to go here. Okay, so a big part of what you're talking about is your dreams in the past were set by what you could see, right? I saw other DJs, and that became my dream. I didn't realize that that dream was not like my own dream and not core. In this world where you're no longer looking, is there anyone that you can look at to keep dreaming now? Or how are you powering your dreaming? How are you powering your visioning if you're not looking at other DJs?
So the dream for me now is no longer about the things that I personally want to accomplish. Now it's about the legacy. Now it's about like the younger person of color, like that younger DJ or the younger DJ or the younger, you know, I'm more than a DJ, you know, I'm a, you know, I program, I had a creative services agency for 8 years where I built Alicia Keys' website to AT&T. Like, I was programming all of this stuff.
Yeah, you're a tech guy.
I'm a tech guy. That's what I love. But like, now I feel comfortable saying that and sharing that with some kid where it's like, there is no greater freedom in life than to be able to do what it is that you love,
yeah,
man.
Thanks.
Like, you know, I'll share a story with you. You know, when I was broke. This was after BDP, when nobody was clapping for me. You know, I started in hip-hop at like 15 years old. By the time I was 23, I was considered old school. Nobody clapping by the time I was 23. Like, yo, what am I going to do? Like, when am I going to get a job? Like, you know, like, I didn't go to college. I went from high school to making music and like finding early success. But then that success I wasn't able to sustain it because hip-hop was kind of in its infancy. Like, we didn't know what it was.
What year is this? Just so
this was like 91, 92, yeah. 92, really.
Yeah.
Going into 93. I didn't know. And by the time, like, 94, I had lost everything, you know? Like, lost everything. My car, my crib. I had to start all over, man. And I had a choice to make. Like, yo, you can go out and get this job or you pursue your passion. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that this is for everyone.
Yeah.
I tried to go out and get a job. It didn't work.
What type of jobs were you looking at? Is this when you're
doing
tech
stuff? I mean,
that
was very limited. No, this was before tech. This was I mean, I didn't have a choice but to try to find, you know, work within the music business because that's where my skill set lied. You know what I mean? Like, I was a producer, so why not become an A&R? And the crazy thing is it was around the time where the music business became kind of like everyone was in their own little clique. Mm. You had the Death Row clique, and you had Bad Boy clique.
Yeah.
And I'm actually not saying this because this is, you know, part of his network.
Yeah.
But the only person that looked out for me was Puff.
Mm.
And Puff was the one that kind of put the battery in my back where it was like, well, Puff and Chris Lighty, but early on it was just Puff. Mm. Like, Puff would set up meetings with, like, record companies for me and walk me into them, like, to be like, hey, you guys should believe in him. Like, I'm not making this up, man. Nothing ever came of it, like, but, like, that man actually walked me into those meetings on his own, and I wasn't signed to him. I never made a dollar for that man, you know what I mean? But he just believed, and, you know, but because of that, it just kept me feeling like I was inspired because I was like, man, if this...
Who needs an alarm in the morning when McDonald's has sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and a breakfast cutoff? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Dude, my guy, he's doing his thing, like, and we weren't even the best of friends like that, you know? He was willing to look out. I was like, man, one day I gotta be that type of person for someone younger than me, you know? And I never forgot that feeling. Like, that feeling was important, even though nothing came of it, but the feeling was important to know that someone who was already here thought enough of me to say, hey, bro, let me help you out. Like, I don't want anything. Let me help you. And walk me into it. So, like, when I played, like the Oscars, you know, like, I played the Oscars. You know, I played the Vanity Fair party afterwards. I played the Governor's Ball. I played Guile Siri and Madonna's party all in one night. And the only thing that mattered to me was what DJ was I going to give this shot to be able to put that on their resume? Because it's already mine now, and I didn't need an opener. And I chose DJs, and I was like, yo, I'm going to use... And I actually chose all women DJs, to be honest with you.
And I follow them now. Like, you put a lot of DJs, like, Sophia, like, I follow a lot of them now.
I was like, nah.
I discovered through you.
I was like, yo, somebody else needs to be able to have... to do for me, or do I need to do for them what Puff did for me or what Chris Lighty did for me by just co-signing.
Yeah.
A co-sign goes a long way, man. Like, so that's my, like, that's what keeps me inspired now. It's no longer, like, trying to accumulate things or, right now it's about, all right, what are you going to do for other people?
Yes, D-Nice the platform, right?
Yeah, true.
Not just about the individual. You dropped, like, a couple of things. You were a tech person. You were a part of Boogie Down Productions, KRS-One. You were, what else did you mention in here? You were a producer. Mm-hmm. You were A&R. What other jobs am I missing?
I'm a father.
Father.
That's a serious job.
Yeah, beautiful
job. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's pretty much it, man. Like, you know, between music, you know, photographer. Obviously, I've done, I was a feature photographer on America's Next Top Model. You know, I shot campaigns for Reebok.
Are you still shooting or no?
More on the personal side, man. Yeah. No campaigns, man.
You just shoot for the love.
I shoot for the love.
Right. You don't want a paycheck. I never take a paycheck for shooting. I think there's some passions that you have to keep outside of economics. Because if you pull economics into it, it ruins the passion. So for me, I never want a check for photography.
The crazy thing is I didn't grow up wanting to be a photographer. Mm-hmm. I was being photographed. They had this XXL magazine. Had this photo shoot called they were recreating the Great Day in Harlem artists.
Yep.
And they were doing it with all hip hop artists.
Okay.
And the photographer was Gordon Parks.
Yep.
And I watched a man who at the time I think he transitioned when he was like 92, so he's probably in his like early 80s. And to watch a man load a film back, like, and to still be passionate about his craft, about what he did for decades, to still be in a position to be like, yo, he's loading film in his hassie, and he started photographing us, and he was smiling. I was like, man, one day when I'm that old, I want to be passionate about whatever it is that I do, you know? And I feel that way about my life now, man. Like, you know, I can always play music. I won't be doing shows, but, like, I can always sit in my living room and pull a record out and play a song and feel happy, and it will take me to a place. I can always pick up my cameras and take a picture of someone and it will make me happy, man. And it goes back to a story I wanted to share about my uncle. You know, when my uncle was, you know, when I was saying those days when I was struggling and trying to figure out life, I called my uncle and, you know, I had no real father figures or male figures in my life. It was just pretty much like me growing up with like my great grandmother. And I called my uncle up and my great uncle on top of that. And I told him what my desires were. I was like, man, you know, I just want to like one day like open up a record company and like start my own thing. And I just don't know what to do. And he said, he told me the story about him being in a position to play in the Negro Leagues. He was friends with like Jackie Robinson and he was, you know, he played baseball just as well. And they were playing, you know, about to go into the Negro Leagues. And then my aunt, you know, he and my aunt ended up having a child and he had to make a choice between following his passion or taking care of his family. And he chose to take care of his family. He was like, you never want to live a life of regrets of not knowing what that other thing could be like had you followed your passion. No one ever said that to me ever, and those words never left me. And I always follow what I'm passionate about. And if it ends up making money, then cool. But when my life is over, I know I will have no regrets. I did everything that I wanted to do.
When did you know that you were in love with music? Can you remember
that? I fell in love. Yeah, I remember exactly the moment that I, well, there were a couple of moments. Falling in love with music, I was about 7 years old. I used to live with my great aunt, and I would always slept in the living rooms. Like, you know, she had a one-bedroom apartment. Like, we always slept. My cousin, he was in the group with me as well, McBoo. We slept in the living room of my aunt's apartment, and she had, like, all of these records. And like just kind of like old school, leaning up against the wall, just a stack of records. And the first record was always like this Diana Ross album. I think it was called Diana, where she was sitting on the floor. I remember the whole thing. She was sitting on the floor. She had these big eyes, short haircut, and it was a black and white photograph. Okay. And I used to just go through those records. And my aunt would never let me play the records. And in there, she always had like Teddy Pendergrass, Melba Moore, which is so crazy to me that and if I go on Instagram Live right now, Melba Moore is in there every day.
Okay.
And like, so that's what, when I see her name on my IG Live, when I shout her out, like people used to always be like, yo, you're shouting out all these people. I'm literally shouting out people that I just admire, that are taking the time to come and hang out with me. Like, you know, it's not easy listening to music on a phone, just walking around reading comments. Like, for someone to just do that, that's beautiful. But that's the moment when I fell in love with music. I fell in love with hip hop when it was early 80s. I was living in the Bronx on College Avenue. See it in this house. And they used to play this Curtis Blow record, The Breaks, all the time. And then when I finally saw a picture of Curtis Blow, you know, he had no shirt on, he had the chain, so that's why I still like kind of rocking. Okay. I'm not gonna take my shirt off though, okay. But like, that's why I like wearing a little, I feel like Curtis Blow every now and then. But that's when I fell in love with hip hop, man.
So you're at the beginning of hip hop. Like, this is, to your point, this is before hip hop pops, right? Did you know or believe back then when you were getting into the business that this was something that would be a global phenomenon? Did you believe that hip hop, because a lot of people back then were saying it was going to be a fad, right? This thing was going to come in and die. You know, you had NAA, Ice Cube, Ice-T coming out. It was contentious with the type of lyrics that were out, right? People wanted it to die. Did you believe that hip hop would survive and become this global phenomenon?
Well, one, we weren't a part of. We were still in this infancy, but we weren't in the beginning of it. So like, that credit would go 70s. To the Kool Herc.
Yeah, and, of course.
You know, I think we were like a generation after, maybe two, to be honest with you, because even after the Kool Herc and Grandmaster Flash, then you had like the LL Cool J,
Run DMC,
Houdini era. And then you had Rakim, KRS, BDP, my crew, obviously, and, you know, Public Enemy. You know, you had that generation, which, you know, they kind of considered like the golden era. That's, you know, the De La Souls and like Big Daddy Kane. So we were part of that group, that class. And then at that point, like, well, I don't think we were even thinking about how long it would last, you know, like, we were really just having fun. Like, that's all that mattered. That's the Will Smith days. Like, we all were just, and everyone at that point started. That's the beauty of, like, that generation and not knocking this era of music, because I love Lil Baby. I listen to everything, man. But in that generation, man, we were all trying to just be different. We didn't rap the same. Everybody had their own audience. Like, you can hear the difference between D Nice and Special Ed and Kwame. Facts. Like, we were all just different.
Facts.
Like, our flows were different. The way we dressed, everything was different.
Yeah.
You know, and we just had fun doing it. You know, now it's a global business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, the biggest thing in the music business is hip hop. You know, and
most listened to music across the globe.
It's beautiful to see, to be honest with you, because those days were very humbling, man. Like, we made records on, like, South Bronx, one of our biggest records, the first record, the introduction record to our career, was made in someone's house, like, on, like, an 8-track, you know, or, like, EPMD, the first entire EPMD album, the first two albums, the entire album is on 1 24-track.
Okay.
And we really think about one reel. Well, this is pre-Pro Tools and all of that.
Right.
But to fit an entire album, that means that you use, like, 4 tracks. You, like, we were just, like, creating this stuff, like, all of us, man. And, like, and we really enjoyed it. Like, and to see what our contributions, you know, in the generation before us and the generation before them, and then also the artists that we sampled, to know that the music was able to live long and live on, it's beautiful, man. Mm-hmm. Like, to see what was created. And now to see, you know, to see the younger generation doing well financially, that's kind of what was missing from us back then. And then now to see it was all possible, it's beautiful, man.
Yeah, man, well, look.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field. From free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify has made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us." Chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/blackprint, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/blackprint.
We are running out of time, so I got to close this down. But brother, I want to close by saying I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for your impact to the culture. You can go back to the 80s and the 90s. I am grateful for your impact today, for the work that you're doing. Like you said, the work that you did at the beginning of quarantine saved a lot of people's lives. You know what I mean? Like, you were one of the biggest conversations that anybody was having back then, because you were doing so much for all of us, feeding all of us. And so I have respect for you on that level. But brother, more than that, I just have respect for you as a brother and as a king, as a father to beautiful, beautiful children. Look, man, I just think the world of you. So thank you for stopping by. Thank you for coming. We're going to have to do it again.
Yes.
But thank you for making the time, King.
My guy, man. Thank you, man.
Yeah, respect.
Appreciate it, man.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Lowe's knows how to get your lawn ready for spring. And right now, you can get up to $20 off select Scotts Triple Action Fertilizer. Plus, get a Cobalt 40-volt 15-inch string trimmer or leaf blower. Your choice, $149, only at Lowe's. Get set for spring. Visit us in-store or online today. Because Lowe's knows home improvement. Valid 3/9 through 3/22. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Everybody loves McDonald's fries. So yes, you accused your mom of stealing some of your fries on the way home. But the bag did feel a little light. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.